in nature. Why should people worship him? Please repeat. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of their own nature, why should people worship him? So this is Lord Krishna speaking as a small boy, and the purport reads, Lord Krishna's argument here is not a negation of free will. If one accepts the existence of karma as a system of laws awarding reactions for our present activities, then we ourselves, according to our nature, will decide our future. Our happiness and distress in this life have already been adjudicated and fixed according to our previous activities, and not even the demigods can change that. They must award us the prosperity or poverty, sickness or health, happiness or distress due us by our previous work. However, we still retain the freedom to select a pious or impious mode of activity in this life, and the choice we make will determine our future suffering and enjoyment. For example, if I was pious in my last life, in this life the demigods may award me great material wealth, but I am free to spend my riches for good or for bad purposes, and my choice will determine my future life. Thus, although no one can change the karmic results due him in this life, everyone still retains his free will, by which he determines what his future situation will be. Lord Krishna's argument here is quite interesting. However, it neglects the overriding consideration that we are all eternal servants of God and must satisfy him by all that we do. So since I was assigned two verses, I guess we better read the second one now as well, and that way we won't be in danger of going over time to finish it. So text 16, Svabhava Tantra Hijana, Svabhavam Anuvartate, Svabhavastam idam sarvam, Sadeva suramanusam, Svabhava, of his conditioned nature, Tantraha, under the control, he, indeed, Jana, a person, Svabhavam, his nature, Anuvartate, he follows, Svabhavastam, based on conditioned propensities, Idam, this world, Sarvam, entire, Sa, together with, Deva, the demigods, Asura, the demons, Manusham, and humankind. Translation, every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. This entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living entities. Purport. Lord Krishna here elaborates upon the argument given in the previous verse. Since everything depends on svabhava, or one's conditioned nature, why bother worshipping God or the demigods? This argument would be sublime if svabhava, or conditioned nature, were all-powerful. But unfortunately, it is not. There is a supreme controller, and we must worship him, as Lord Krishna will emphatically reveal in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. For now, however, he is content to tease his relatives. Om Jnanatimirantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manho Vishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Sapadantikam.
I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual masters very kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. I offer my most respectful obeisances unto him. When will Srila Rupa Goswami, who has established within this world the mission to establish the message of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? So, as I was reading the verses today, I suddenly saw, as if for the first time, how the word svabhava repeats and repeats itself, and I thought, oh, we should have had a scholar reading these verses, and they could elaborate on this meaning, but it's described, it's one's conditioned nature, and as Maharaj kindly points out in the purport, that Krishna's argument, saying that everything depends on svabhava, or one's conditioned nature, why bother worshipping God or the demigods? This argument would be sublime if svabhava or conditioned nature were all-powerful, but unfortunately, he says, it is not. Thank you, dear. But of course, I was thinking when I read that sentence that unfortunately, svabhava is not all-powerful. Actually, it's fortunate that svabhava is not all-powerful, and that Krishna's mercy supersedes such conditioned natures into which we are all born. Based on our previous choices, it's funny, sometimes you hear people using the word karma, oh, this terrible situation has happened to me, even if they have some awareness and understanding, or even if they're devotees. And that, you know, so we have some general understanding, we have from Bhagavad Gita lots of detailed understanding of the law of karma, the word karma. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says the intricacies of action are very difficult to understand. Still, we sometimes hear devotees and others saying, oh, this terrible thing happened to me, as if I am the victim of the terrible thing that happened to me. And yet the very understanding of the concept of karma means that I'm the victim of my own choices in a previous life or in a previous era in this life. And so actually, we're not victims, but we still have the opportunity to choose choices, even though it seems like we're being propelled in a certain direction, but because of Krishna's mercy and because of our free will, we always have the opportunity to make choices now that will shift the direction in which we're traveling. And I thought of how there's a common saying that destiny is what happens to you and free will is what you do about it. I have a daily calendar that a similar quote just came up on from Henry David Thoreau. And he said, it's not what you see that matters. No, I mean, it's not what you look at that matters. It's what you see. So the same situation could happen to a number of different people. Somebody, you know, a car accident, for example. Somebody may, oh, this totally ruined my life. Now, you know, how can I ever get out from underneath this catastrophe that's happened? And somebody else may say, oh, just see, I was too attached to that car and Krishna has kindly taken it away just now. I need a better one, or whatever. Somehow he finds a way. And this is actually just like people go to the gym and work out and they gradually build up the strength of their muscles. Similarly, we can develop an attitude of gratitude by constantly remembering, and this is why we hear every day, such verses as Tatenu Kampam Susamikshamano, that whatever it is that's happened to me that appears to be a reverse. Thank you, Krishna. I deserve much worse. You've just minimized it because of my attempt at serving you. And no matter what it is that happens, I'm yours. Please do with me as you like. I've actually seen one of these license plates that people put in the front of their car if the state doesn't require front and back. And it was showing a person's shoes from the bottom side, as if the person had fallen on the ground and only the feet were there, and it said, "Praise the Lord anyway." And it was just like, you know, tate nu kampam. It's just saying, okay, whatever happens, you fell down. You know, whether it's spiritual fall down and then you have to dust yourself off and pick yourself back up again and get back on the path, or fallen in some material way, as is bound to happen with the vicissitudes of time. Even if we're wonderfully beautiful and have all talents and money and beautiful home, nice partner, et cetera, still time is going to take that all away. And generally speaking, other impediments come along the way. So I'm more was thinking about the concept. Some of these topics came up in the last couple classes. I think someone asked Maharaj yesterday about are there verses in Bhagavad Gita that support this philosophy that Krishna is preaching. So I didn't go and research Bhagavad Gita, and I'm really not a scholar. I used to memorize a few verses. Some of them were coming back to me when I was preparing. But the verses that actually came to me that contradict child Krishna's argument, of course, he's just teasing his relatives, and the whole point of the pastime, as Chaturatma Prabhu was saying, and we all know, is to humble King Indra. Even though he's a devotee, he's acting in a demoniac way in terms of becoming puffed up with false pride and thinking that the residents of Vrindavan are wrong to not worship him. But so Krishna's telling his father so many atheistic arguments in a very charming way as a small boy, and the amazing thing is that they listen to him, you know. So but one thing that came to my mind when I was thinking, is it just the laws of karma? Are we bound? And a very strong verse that's a favorite of so many devotees from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 7. Old devotees will remember that being published as a small book, Lord Chaitanya in 5 features. And it was just so much mercy. And there are many, many wonderful verses in it, but here's one. I'll just read the English. The Krishna consciousness movement will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether one be a gentleman, a rogue, or even lame, invalid, or blind. So you think, oh, if somebody's a gentleman, then his previous karma is very pious and good. If somebody's a rogue, obviously he's made some wrong choices, and he may have made wrong choices in this life. But does that stand in the way? Is that an inevitable thing that, oh, he was born a gentleman, he's born a rogue, he must continue as such? No. The Krishna consciousness movement will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether one be a gentleman, a rogue, or even lame, invalid, or blind. So, you know, being lame, being blind, all these things would be indications of sinful activities performed in previous life. But Lord Chaitanya and his associates, the Panchatattva, they didn't care for these karmic restrictions, the svabhava, if you will, of all these souls, especially here in Kali Yuga, where we don't have the inclination to perform great austerities and sit in meditation with very peaceful minds for thousands of years. We can barely sit still for a Bhagavatam class, you know, if we're even inclined to come to it. And so we don't have the wealth to perform great sacrifices. We don't have, although we certainly here do extraordinarily beautiful deity worship. Did people see the tiger that Chota Gorni Thai had? Was it yesterday or the day before? There was a tiger in front of Lord Chaitanya. Someone mentioned to me, so I went over closely to see it, and there he was, just like straight out of Charikanda forest. He was a tiger, but he had a rose in his mouth. So this is the thing, you know, Lord Chaitanya's mercy and Lord Nityananda, and together their mad ecstasies of just, let's go get everybody in the whole world. It doesn't matter what they have been up till now. If they'll just take your holy names, take Krishna's holy names, and give up their sinful activities, you know, just get on board. We're all going back to Godhead. So another verse after that is, in distributing love of God, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates did not consider who was a fit candidate and who was not, nor where such distribution should or should not take place. They made no conditions. Wherever they got the opportunity, the members of the Panchatattva distributed love of Godhead. So, we are with Krishna and Nanda Maharaj and all the residents of Vrindavan at Govardhan Hill, and Lord Indra is becoming frustrated, and there'll be so many pastimes around that. So many relationships that take place and get to manifest during the Govardhan Leela. But this point here today mostly is about the destiny of human beings born of their own nature. Are the demigods bound to reward simply the results of your past pious or impious activities? And Krishna's argument is, why bother worshiping Indra? Why worship at all? But what that will lead to, let's worship Govardhan Hill. He's the one that gives grass to our cows. Our cows are the ones that sustain our livelihood with the milk and butter and yogurt and so many things that are coming from them. So I just actually wanted to bring in some ideas. We have such an exalted group of devotees present, so I'd like to open it up for discussion and see if there are comments or questions on any of these points.
I have a question.
Okay.
Very often in here we also are discussing karma and how we're destined to get a certain amount of suffering and a certain amount of pleasure. And we even sometimes hear people say that, you know, don't hate the agents of your karma, because amongst close people they tend to be the deliverers,
right,
of your karma. But what about the other side of karma? I often get asked questions through Krishna.com and other places where people, you know, wonder, well, okay, so this person who had a horrible thing happen to them, and you referred to a car accident, but sometimes, you know, someone gets killed and shot, okay? So someone gets shot, and you say that the person who got shot, it was his karma to get shot. And maybe he was killed, or maybe he was just maimed and, you know, he's unable to walk for the rest of his life. So he should see that as a coming of his karma. Well, what about the shooter? How does he fit into it all? If he was just delivering the karma, then what's his culpability? And obviously he has some, but at the same time, he's the deliverer of the karma. So how does that work?
Well, as the first sentence of this First purport says Lord Krishna's argument here is not a negation of free will. So the shooter may have been born in this life with a tendency to be violent, to become angry. And he may have ended up in a situation where there's guns around. But still, his reaching out and picking up the gun and pulling the trigger is an act of free will. So this is the point that our activities now are determining our future enjoyment and suffering. And Jaigori wants to add to that or say something on that point? Okay, give it to Jaigori.
Krishna has this incredible power to, by one action, he can fulfill many, many different situations. So I find that in that, you know, the shooter and the person, you know, just Krishna has the power to orchestrate in such a way that people will be at the right time, at the right place to fulfill that desire, to fulfill, you know. So he has the power to orchestrate all this.
Right.
Make sure to everybody is in the right place to deliver, you know, and to pick up their own karma.
It's thank you. No, he does. And just that I know at times of like great, especially great national tragedies, but even also personal tragedies, although it's very important that we understand the role of the laws of karma, we still should be, I'm more addressing Lakshmimoni's question, when we're responding to the person who's been hurt or even the hurter, you know, to be compassionate and somehow try to find a way not just to brush it off, oh, that's their karma, but to help them see, as you were pointing out, that this is orchestrated by also the hand of the Supreme, and try to help each person come to realize that in an individual way. This is what's missing in the atheistic belief in reincarnation, that that there's no personal God who can actually, like the governor comes into the prison, the prisoners may all be there with life sentences, or some are waiting on death row, but the governor actually has the power to give a pardon, and Krishna can change anybody's. Prabhupada said even by clapping our hands in front of the deity, we're changing the lines of our palms. In other words, the sinful reactions, they're going out the window because of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because of Krishna's mercy. So to try to find a way to insert the name of Krishna Samprasadam or some understanding of Bhagavat philosophy to a person who's suffering in a state like that. And actually at such times of death or other trying circumstances, people are more open, at least for a time. It's really important that we reach out in a way that can touch their heart so they'll be open to what wisdom we might have gleaned and can share. Maharaj, you have the microphone, please.
I don't know if we succeeded in completely answering Mother Lakshmimoni's question, maybe a little more discussion on that.
Sure.
The background idea is that not that everything Krishna sanctions is what he actually desires. And that includes the whole elaborate system of karma. Of course, he set that up, but within that system, he's sanctioning, like every time we often hear devotees tell us that something very bad happens to us, or even we feel we've been abused in some way, And then we say, well, you know, ultimately it's Krishna's will. Nothing happens without, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that this is really, you can't count as pious just because one is incidentally involved in that, as was mentioned, that many things are done at the same time, that I'm using my free will, misusing my free will, and shooting somebody, but at the same time, that other thing is happening, that I'm like only a pawn in the game, and that I'm also, you know, it's ultimately sanctioned by Krishna, but that doesn't mean that Krishna wants me to do it.
Right.
Another aspect is that it's not exactly always what we're doing, but it's our motive in what we're doing. And so a king, for instance, may execute someone in Vedic culture, we say, mm-hmm. and it may seem like a similar action, but he's authorized and he's doing it to perform his duty, or kshatriya is killing the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But Prabhupada mentions purport in Bhagavad Gita that if you just kill one man without that order, then you're a criminal. Even though ultimately it's that person's karma. Then again, it could be a disruption as well. This becomes a little complex. I mean, we hear, like, for instance, in slaughtering animals, that we're interfering with the karma of the animal. We're not just, you can't say, well, it was the animal's karma. So, no, we hear that you're retarding the spiritual evolution of the animal because it was, like, not according to the laws of God. It was against mm-hmm. the laws of nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess that, you know, yes, everything is my karma, but at the same time, okay, we have to accept it's my karma, even if someone shoots you, but it may, it's just very, very different from when it's done as a duty, let's say, by a king. Maybe Shesha Prabhu can help me.
And on the way, while the microphone's on the way, I actually was in Vrindavan one time when there was some Gunda shooting that took place, and one of the devotee ladies was shot. I think the shot in the neck. It didn't kill her, though. And her comment, her response was, Radharani's heavy mercy. So, there is a way to respond.
And I wonder if there's not such a thing as an innocent bystander, innocent victim. I mean, because if there's not, then where does the quality of tolerance and how does it develop? I mean, if we can rationalize everything that it's my, you know, reaction to a previous thing I did, I'm getting my karma or something like that, then it seems to me that reduces the necessity to just tolerate. I mean, when you're a victim of something, you're considering yourself a victim, an innocent bystander or something bad that's happened to you, then the response to that is to tolerate, is to be tolerant and develop a quality of tolerance. And so I wonder if there's not such a thing as an innocent bystander.
I'm not sure that I understand what you're asking exactly.
Well, I'm saying I don't know if I'm asking anything. But I'm saying that that in any situation that happens, is there any freshness to it, or is it all just, you know, like going back, you know, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime and finally coming to fruition? Or is there anything fresh that's happening right there, you know?
Well, I would say that the freshness lies in the moment, that our response, the incidents that are occurring to us, that's our karma. karma. And it may be a very, it's a complicated maze of our own, somebody else's, you know. But, and it's also because we're not actually subscribers to the karma mimamsa philosophy. We also know that Krishna's hand, the Lord's hand, is woven throughout all the different circumstances. Sometimes people say, why did this thing happen to me? I don't understand. I've always been so pious. And if they're told, maybe by, or like we see with the Pandavas, for example, they were certainly such exalted devotees of the Lord. It wasn't that they had done anything wrong. And yet, they had to undergo so many years of exile, have their wife disrobed in public, so many things. But ultimately, what that seemed to be for was to show the level of their devotion.
Well, that's a good example you're saying. So the devotees, like the Pandavas, they're put into, it's not their karma, they're put into circumstances
right.
to show the greatness of a devotee. Now, we may not be on the level of the Pandavas, but isn't there something in a devotee's life also that something happens? It may be Krishna's hand for some other purpose?
That's the point, is that we are being trained to see Krishna as the cause more than our karma. But part of the training is to understand that the laws of karma are there.
Is it just our karma? Is there anything else? Is it just our karma or is there anything else?
Stididi wants to answer your question. Oh, and your wife also has something to say.
You want to come over and fight for the microphone?
Well,
here's a couple of crazy thoughts.
Okay.
I mean, karma comes from Krishna too. It's not like it's some separate thing from
right.
Krishna. I mean, it's his system to set up this karma.
Right.
Ultimately, it's based on his compassion to let the conditioned souls work through their stuff. And karma is intimately tied in with desire. It's a reaction to past desires. And we have desires right now creating new karma. So it's tough to like, it's complex, like you said. I mean, it's, you know, in our present state, we need some labels and word, you know, things to try to wrap our mind around it. But, you know, we're just scratching the surface from the perspective of a demigod or whatever, who's actually working these issues on whatever the situation might be. And then another thing is, couldn't it be our karma to be an innocent victim?
Madhumati was first. Yeah, well, I stopped early. There's plenty of time.
Well, I'll clear up everybody's points
good.
Here.
Madhumati Umacha.
Anyway, that will deal with everybody's question. I heard Radha Govinda Maharaj one time saying in a class that 99.9% that happens in our lives in this life is from our previous life. So it is 99.9%. That's what he said. So there is that 0.1%. So at least he didn't say, but my understanding is that, okay, if we say 99.9% is our karma, then where is maybe that 0.1% is our free will. And I think the 0.1% is our free will is our consciousness, is how we deal with it, whether we are the one who is shot or whether we are the one who is shooting. I think that freshness that Seshapur was talking about and what Lakshmoni is talking about, how the other person deals with, I think our consciousness is not so much as what we are doing, so to speak, or what's happening to us. Let's say that is that 99.9%, but how we think about it, where is our consciousness, and that is our freshness, that's our tolerance, that's our humility. If we are the one who is shooting somebody, is how are we dealing with that, how we're thinking, you know. I think both situations have a lot of purification to go through. So I think that's our freshness, that's how we're thinking, as, you know, we're the perpetrator or we're the victim or whatever it may be, you know.
Yeah, how we see it.
Yeah.
How we see it, our attitude. Yeah, that makes so much difference. Thank you.
And that's kind of takes you on the next slide.
Yeah, it does, actually. Madan Mohan actually did have his hand up before Maharaj.
Okay.
Just two little points. One about the shooter. That was his karma to spend the rest of his life in jail, and the person he shot was just the instrument.
So, and if he's lucky, the ISKCON prison ministry
exactly.
will have a branch in his prison.
Because we do talk to people there, and they say it's the best thing that ever happened. That was one thing. And then also about how karma changes for a devotee is if you've learned your lesson, then why do you have to take that course over again? So karma is it's related to you learning something.
Right.
So that your karma changes, you're different. Your lessons... Okay, out you go. So your lesson also, maybe you don't need that one anymore, so that's removed. Maybe you still need something, a token of it, and it comes. It's
right.
personal now.
Nope, Maharaj is next. He had his hand up before you.
Sorry. I think in this discourse, it would be useful to acknowledge that there are two different contexts and two different discussions. When we start mixing the devotee factor and the Krishna factor and how karmani nirdhati kint, then it becomes... then there's a whole other factor involved. It's now just like a multiple chess game now,
right.
because there's a whole different factor. So I'm sticking to the first point of aside from that special mercy where Krishna relieves us of so much of our karma and so, you know, that whole dynamic mm-hmm. principle. But in this world, that question is maybe a little easier if we use the word justice. Now, there is such a thing as injustice in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, although that same act might be unjust within this world, but again, not a blade of grass moves out the will of the Lord, and it is the person's karma that happened. So the sinful reaction, why the person, the shooter, say, is held responsible, is that we can't play God. Unless we're Narada, unless we're king. King is God and man. He can play God. No, he's not playing. He's serious. He can enact the will of Manu, like Manu Sangita. He can do that. That's his role. But even he, we're not... It's Krishna who punishes and does these things according to what happened in our previous life. But I don't know of any system of justice in this world where the administrators of the justice are responsible for figuring out what someone did in their previous life and punishing them. So in that sense, we can't play God. Therefore, the person is certainly accountable, even though what he's doing on a very esoteric level is actually quite fitting according to the person's bad acts. And of course, in this world, even if the person did something wrong in this life, unless one is a kshatriya and had that duty, even that is not, you can't take the law into your own hands, as
mm-hmm.
they say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another point is just very simple, is that it's often pointed out, I don't think our Krishna conscious understanding contradicts this, where in animal it's like Pavlovian. It's like stimulus and response. It's completely determined. The animals mm-hmm. have virtually no free will. Even you train the animal, it seems like it's controlling itself. That's only different urges. It doesn't want to get hit by the newspaper. It wants to get fed, so it can get trained. But the animal itself is not making any decision. Certainly, there's no question of moral decision. Whereas in humans, it's like our mothers used to tell us, you know, when you're very angry, count to 10 before you react. So with human being, it's stimulus and response. But between stimulus and response, there's a chance to check myself,
mm-hmm.
to control the urges of anger, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, I hope that's understandable. The whole Krishna factor and how it affects devotees, I would reserve that for another discussion.
Different topic.
That's a kind of a different topic in a sense, and more complicated.
Okay, Trivikram Prabhu did actually have his hand up some time back.
Very interesting discussion. In Vedic times, justice was based on the laws of Manu, the scriptures, and you could say that you'd get good justice then. But unfortunately, now in Kali, it's not the same. And right now, most of the world, more than 3/4 of the population, does not believe in the laws of karma. The whole Christian world, the whole Muslim world, the whole atheistic world, even the Buddhists to some degree. You see, they don't believe in the laws of karma. So that's very unfortunate. But for example, a blind man, a dumb man, a layman, we see it as their karma. But the other world does not see them as that one. And so because of that, they might not strive for perfection in their disability, you see? But one who understands karma, he understands because of his previous deeds, he's blind or deaf or whatever, and he would try to do better now. He would try for perfection. But so in one sense, we can say, unfortunately, because most of the world does not believe in karma, then in their disabilities, they're not seeing it as their karma, but they just saw it as maybe chance or whatever.
Right. Well, it's interesting because they, like you gave the Christian as one example of not believing in karma, and it's true, they don't have a clear understanding of past lives and carrying things over, but they do have a law in the Bible, as you sow, so shall you reap. So this is understanding of the law of karma in a, you know, just like what goes around comes around. Even atheistic people nowadays will say that. They understand there is justice, and if people behave very badly towards their fellow man, you know, then when they get the shaft end, people go, well, hey, that was bound to happen. So, yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment.
Please.
When one devotee approached Prabhupada, he cut his arm, and he approached Prabhupada, and he says, Prabhupada, my arm is cut. I thought you took away all of my karma. And Prabhupada said, you deserve to lose your arm. Krishna gave you a token reaction.
Right. I heard a really nice example one time given in Mayapur when a question was asked about that point, that at initiation, the understanding is the spiritual master takes away our karma. How is it then that devotees apparently suffer so many? And the person gave the example, I might have heard it recently in a class here as well, of a, you've ever seen a newspaper that's been burned in a fire? You can actually see some of the picture, and you can even read some of the words in that charcoal form of the newspaper, but as soon as you touch it, it crumbles into ashes. So our previous karma after initiation is like that. We are certainly getting some token residue, but it has no substance as long as we follow the orders of the spiritual master.
There's a sliding scale. For one who is not purified or sinful, the modes of material nature, i.e. karma, completely deal with them. Whereas on the other end of the scale, for example, devotees are striving to become purified on a daily basis. We perform activities which are above the modes of material nature, chanting sacred mantras, performing seva, taking darshan of the deities, eating sanctified foodstuff, etc. So on the other end of the scale is Govinda. Lord Brahma says, karmadi nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan, that for a devotee, Krishna crushes and annihilates our karma. So the other end of the scale, as we become purified, we're striving more and more to get to that stage where instead of the modes of material nature dealing with us, Govinda personally deals with us. As Srila Prabhupada used to sometimes comment, lying on the lap of Krishna. So a lot of devotees have been chanting 20, 30, 40 years. So hopefully we're coming to that platform at some point. We're gradually getting purified.
We hope so, if our chanting is pure. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
Just one little, also a comment. When you were talking, that nice idea about it's not what you're looking at, it's what you see. The word in Sanskrit for philosophy is darshan, which means to see, tatva vit, to the Atattva Darshan, to see through the eyes of the scripture, the Shastra Chakshus. So
right.
What we being trained, we're being trained by the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, to, it's not what you're looking at, which is the empirical point of view,
right.
But there's more to it than meets the eye, which
right.
is the Shastra transcendental point of view. So then we're actually seeing it 4/29/69. You should see it the same way that Krishna sees it. So he's telling us how to see it, and that's what Krishna consciousness is. So it was a nice...
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I think we had a nice discussion, and unless anybody has any more, we'll just carry all those thoughts with us to Prasadam. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much.